Studio 360.
This episode, we are looking at live theater. And when it comes to musical theater, Jack Bertel is kind of a human encyclopedia. Back in the day, he was a theater critic. He's now artistic director of Encores, a series at Lincoln Center here in New York that resurrects old musicals. But that's just one of his jobs. He's also a prolific hands-on producer of major Broadway shows, including Hairspray and Kinky Boots. A couple of years ago, Jack Bertel published a great book called The Secret Life of the American Musical, How Broadway Shows Are Built. It really changed the way I watch theater. And I asked him in to talk about it. So, let's go through this masterclass. The overture was in the old days the instrumental beginning of the show, then the opening number. Break down the important component parts of a great opening number.
Michael Blakemore, the director, had this wonderful thing that he said once at a dinner party that I was at, which is the minute the curtain goes up, the audience is in trouble. And what he meant by that was that you don't really know where to look or what you're looking at. And of course, scenery helps tell you where we are. But a great opening number, I think, typically doesn't delve into the plot of the show quite yet, but sets a tone, introduces you to what the world of the piece is, when the piece is happening. And it should do all of that work, you know, in an unexpected way that makes you want to get on the ride and find out where it's going to happen. There are no rules yet in the show.
Right.
But by the end of it, you should pretty much know what the territory of the show is.
Okay, I want to play one of your textbook opening numbers from Oklahoma in 1943. And while it's playing, explain what we're seeing on stage.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright
We're outdoors, very, very far from Broadway.
The corn is as high as an elephant's eye.
This is a cowboy who wanders on stage, whose love for the land and for his surroundings is completely unguarded.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
Before Oklahoma, most shows started with a chorus of people on stage singing some form of, you know, welcome to the show or a pretty girl is like a melody or whatever. And Rodgers and Hammerstein, who had agreed to adapt this play that was set on a rural farm and didn't have any opportunity to bring a chorus of people on right at the beginning. And so they wrote this number for a single person to wander out on stage by himself. And nothing like that had ever been tried before.
And I'm so happy to learn that and think of that because, of course, one thinks of Oklahoma and that song as so old-fashioned, so corny. And yet it was the height of modern minimalism, I guess, in 1943.
It was. It really startled people. And I think it startled them with less rather than with more. And that in itself was startling because shows – musical shows tend to be muscle-bound. You know, they want to do everything all the time.
Yes. So the next key component is, as you say, the I Want song, which is the main character explicitly saying, here's what I'm after.
Musicals are very different than most other forms of storytelling in that they keep stopping and starting. There are songs and dances and costume changes and scenery changes. And if you don't have someone driving the story forward in a very specific way, it's hard to succeed. And so one of the things that tends to work really well in a musical is a character stepping up and saying, this is what I want. It's hard to get. I'm going to get it. I'm going to die trying if I don't get it. Watch me, let's go. And musicalizing that moment is a challenge that we all call the I Want song.
Gypsy has a great, very explicit I Want song called Some People. Set up what has happened, what we are seeing.
Well, in the opening scene of Gypsy, it has a very modest opening number, which is two little girls who are a kiddie act in vaudeville doing their number.
I will do some tricks.
Sing out, please.
I'll tell you a story.
after it's over, we realize that the main character of the story seems to be the mother of these two girls and that they have no talent. But she's going to get them out and get them on stage. One way or another. And, of course, the real ambition is not for them. It's for her.
Some people can be content playing bingo and paying rent. That's peachy for some people, for some humdrum people to be.
Ethel Merman.
But some people ain't me.
I never forgave my parents for not taking me to this show.
I had a dream, a wonderful dream, Papa. All about June and the Orpheum Circuit. Give me a chance and I know I can work it. I had a dream, just as real as can be, Papa.
The hugely successful, maybe transformative musical right now, of course, is Hamilton. And one of the reasons is that when you look past its innovations and its newness, using hip-hop, racially counterfactual casting, it's really an old-fashioned musical.
In some ways it is. It has an opening number. It has an I Want song. It has a lot of sort of typical pieces of the machine in it.
And its I Want song is?
It's called My Shot. I'm not going to miss my shot.
I know the action in the street is exciting, but Jesus, between all the bleeding and fighting, I've been reading and writing. We need to handle our financial situation. Are we a nation of states? What's the state of our nation? I'm past patiently waiting. I'm passionately smashing every expectation. Every action's an act of creation. I'm laughing in the face of casualties of sorrow. For the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow. And I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. We're gonna rise away in time and take a shot.
One of the great things about hip-hop is two great things. One is that just energetically, it really does drive you forward. Yeah. And the other is that thematically, a lot of the best hip-hop is about social change. And this is a show about a society being formed. So they really go very well together. A much better natural mate for musical theater than classic rock and roll, which tends to have lyrics that are repetitive or very simple-minded or, Jerry Lieber, who wrote a lot of the early rock songs, right, once said, most of my songs are content-free. And I thought it was a great phrase.
Yeah. Having read your book, I see that a great musical is like a machine or like a big old-fashioned novel. And, you know, you need the musical numbers to propel it. You need the subplots with lesser but interesting people. And then when something, one of those or more, is totally out of whack, the whole thing falls to pieces. You write about a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum that was maybe fatally flawed, and they fixed it.
Yeah, that's a show that was a disaster out of town. It wasn't, people didn't laugh at that show out of town, and it had an opening number called Love Is in the Air.
It's spreading each minute. Throughout the whole vicinity, step out and you're in it with all the fun involved. Who can stay on and call the lovers in the air?
It was a charming song about love, and it drives you crazy, and you know, you'll never. And this is going to be a charming evening of charm. The show doesn't have any charm. The show has mayhem. You know, yeah. It's a lowbrow knockabout comedy. So Stephen Sondheim and George Abbott and Hal Prince and probably the book writers as well, Larry Gelbart and Bert Shevelev, called Jerome Robbins down to wherever the show was trying out, Washington. I think it was at the National in Washington at the time. And he looked at it and said, well, you've got the wrong opening numbers. You've got to write a number about welcome to your audience. You're going to see a lowbrow farce. And so Stephen Sondheim went back and wrote Comedy Tonight, which is, you know, a 7 or 8 minute event.
Frenzy and frolic, strictly symbolic, something for everyone, a Comedy Tonight.
And it, that one thing.
It immediately transformed?
It everything. Because things that weren't funny 2 hours into the show, when Love Is in the Air was the opening number, suddenly were funny. Huh. And that's really a kind of alchemy. And I think took, on Robbins' part, an understanding of what the importance is of setting up the expectations for the audience in the right way.
You've worked as a producer on lots and lots of musicals, including M. Butterfly and The Producers and Jelly's Last Jam. I'm fascinated by when you were wrong about something and were proven wrong.
There's a number in Hairspray that Motormouth Maybell sings toward the end with the ensemble. It's a very – it's a 6-8 gospel, classic gospel.
I Know
gospel.
Where I've Been.
Yes, I Know Where I've Been. And it replaced a number called Step On Up, which was a much hotter number, you know, much jazzier number. And I really felt it was not right to stop this show in its tracks, which is basically a campy comedy with a political edge to it.
Yeah, to have this whole civil rights
aria. To have this whole little, like, quite somber civil rights moment. I was 100% wrong. I mean, it wasn't that I was afraid of the politics of it, because the whole show is political.
Right.
But the composer and lyricist, Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, and the director, Jack O'Brien, and the various book writers really wanted to stop and just pause. And I thought, we'll never recover from this. When I saw it up on its feet, I thought, well, that was stupid. I mean, obviously, it was a great, great idea.
That was Mary Bond Davis in your original Broadway production of Hairspray. A musical like that is in sharp contrast to Stephen Sondheim, who's a genius with his own brand of musicals, complicated lyrically, musically, philosophically. But it strikes me, tell me if you agree or disagree with this, that in this century, in the first decade of this century, something happened that allowed musical comedies to be actually funny and huge hits again. And I'm thinking of Hairspray and Book of Mormon. And I felt like, to the degree I went to musical theater, new musical theater in the previous 25 years, like, meh. And suddenly the atmosphere allowed those shows to happen.
I think that's true. I think we went through a real shock of the new about ourselves around the time that Stephen Sondheim was writing Company and Follies, where we all woke up and, you know, the Vietnam War was coming to an end. It actually ended on the night of the first out-of-town preview of A Little Night Music.
That's a fact you just happened to know?
I was there. And Len Carey, who stopped the curtain call and announced that an accord had been reached.
Uh-huh.
It was quite a moment. And I think we wandered around a little bit shell-shocked for a while as a nation after that. Somehow, in the last 10 years or whatever, we've found new and different ways of making merry. It's a seriously good thing, I think.
Yeah.
But those new and different ways do involve a fair amount of cynicism, a fair amount of, you know, a gimlet-eyed view of the world, so that you would
meaning never, they're actually funny, as I said.
Well, they're actually funny, right? But you would never confuse Hairspray with, a musical comedy from the 50s.
Right.
They're different. They're
right.
Really different.
Right.
Say Book of Mormon most of all, perhaps.
No, it sort of had to almost die as a form to be reborn.
In a sense, I guess. The cultural clock had to go around quite a few times.
Yes, yeah. So I wanted to think of a song to play you out on. At the end of this interview, the obvious would be, of course, from Annie, Get Your Gun, Irving Berlin's There's No Business Like Show Business, but too obvious. So what should we play you out on?
Well, Broadway Baby, which is from Follies, is a song that's about a slightly pathetic character who wants to be in show business. How about that?
Self-deprecating to the end, or at the end. Jack Fertel, this has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm just a Broadway baby, walking off my tired feet, pounding 42nd Street to be in a show.
I talked with Jack Fertel in 2016. You can hear a longer version of our conversation on our website, studio360.org. Learn.